Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 401 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Carlene Z. To find out more about how you could become a co-producer, or what one even is, and learn maybe some English too, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
I wouldn't come to you for the English lessons though.
Did you say lessons?
I did, but I didn't mean to.
We're already at a really bad start. Okay.
Oh God. Okay. This week we'll be discussing episode 605 entitled Give Me Liberty.
So this has been, I don't even know if telegraphed is the right word. This has been straight up hinted at. I don't know that I'm pretty sure all of us could guess. So once there was kind of some news stories or someone had quoted, I forget the guy's name, the actor who played Bonnie Prince Charlie, once he had been quoted as saying, yeah, you know, with, I don't know, I think it was Sam. I could be wrong. I don't think it was Katrina, but it was insinuating that once Sam became a producer and had more of a hand in things, that he kind of laughed that he had a thought that he might be coming back for something like he did here. So as soon as you have the actor who played the Bonnie Prince speaking up about how he was involved in some way with six, talked about something related to clothing, you're like, okay, if you know the story at all, you know straight up what it was going
to
be.
I would like to say that this episode literally broke out of every mold that
it was like a ketchup
has had.
I don't even know. You're right. It doesn't have a really good model.
I mean, it was a cold open, obviously. It brought back Mark Me. And then it flowed into the title song, but it was a different version of it. And the backgrounds were all not episode referring to other episodes with scenes from other things. It was things that were happening in the course of the journey over the sea to Sky with the Gaelic version of.
Yeah. So don't let anybody tell you that Outlander has a model, or I should say a model that they stick to, because they don't.
Not anymore.
So of course, the cold open was a throwback to post-Culloden. So Culloden was April 16th, 1746. And this was June something, 1746. So approximately 2 months later, but I think a little bit shy of 2 months. Yeah. So that gives us the time and the place. Or it's in the Isles. That's all we know right there. And it's Flora MacDonald. She's helping the prince escape. And she literally says the words over the sea. I mean, come on. And then he says something. He's like, well, you know what he says. He tells her, like, you will always be remembered for this and cherished. I don't even know if he says, I'll be paid. I am having trouble, you all. I don't remember if he said, like, I will pay you handsomely. He didn't really promise money or anything. What I understood, at least, was that he was implying some kind of thing beyond mere lip service. No idea that ever happened later on. It didn't seem that she got anything, but it doesn't matter. My point is,
no, he just became like a prophet. You'll be remembered for what you've done.
Oh, Lord. And when he threw in a Mark Me, I was like, oh, Lord, my...
Would it have been, why even have him back if you're not going to have him say Mark Me?
Fine enough.
Everyone took a drink. We had a good night.
So what I did love, and I was surprised I loved it. Not that I didn't think I would hate it, but you and I have talked a little bit, especially at the beginning of the season, with the new opening, right? Meaning the music and the singing in English. Well, they always sing typically sing in English, the splitting of the changing of the words for the dude singing, and then the girl singing, right? And this, of course, was 100% the dude. I cannot confirm that they changed the sex gender, whichever it is, the pronoun from, or sorry, the noun from last to lad, or the Gaelic their equivalent thereof. That's beyond my pay grade. However, it was all in Gaelic. And I gotta say, before I say the next thing, I don't know if it was the combination of his voice and the Gaelic, but Summer, this has probably been the most effective, even more than season one. Maybe just up there with season one, because season one was, we went from zero to Outlander, so there's not really a comparison. But how every other season or half season or change, whatever change we've ever had in the opening music, I've never reacted like I have to this specific change. And I don't know if it's because it's all a dude or because of his voice. Like, he doesn't have a bad voice. I never have said that. But him singing, and it's not necessarily the fact that he sang in English before that made him sound different, but this one hit me in my gut. I mean, I had tears in my eyes. This was freaking gorgeous.
But that's the thing. I found it effective when he sang it by himself, fully in Gaelic.
100%.
It's not battling with itself, which is how I feel this year's theme has kind of sounded, because it's very modernish sounding female voice, and then a very stoic,
a more traditional,
traditional male voice that sounds like in the past, which again could have been the point all along, and I just didn't get it well enough to like it as much. But I don't hate it now.
Not only was I surprised at my reaction, I would have been very happy if I liked it, and I did, but good Lord, my reaction was like absolute, again, not bawling, but absolute tears. Like, if I listen to that, ooh, again, I will get tears, because I can't explain why. It's the sound of his voice. It's the fact that it's in Gaelic. Yes. It's the fact that you're looking at literally over the sea to sky as he's singing it, right? It's all the things. And I'm sure 100% you're right that's exactly why they did the visuals as when they did it, right? Or how they did it. Mm-hmm. The thing that I realized, and I know I heard it both times. I heard it on the first watch. I was just as affected, but it stood out to me because I tried to figure out, why is this so moving? Why is this so different? Besides the fact that it's 100% a dude, besides the fact that it's 100% in Gaelic.
Did it feel more authentic? I mean, not authentic Outlander, but authentic to the Scottish framing of this particular episode?
I don't know about the episode or about traditional Gaelic song medium. What I will say is the only thing besides the thing we talked about, besides that it's all in a dude, besides the fact all in dude sing, dude song, besides the fact that it's all by the dude and he's got an awesome voice, it's so, so well fit for this specific thing. And because it was in Gaelic, I think it's all effective, right? The thing that stood out to me when I was trying to be more think critically about why is this affecting me like this? The thing that stood out to me was that he was not just singing it in Gaelic to the same tune, right? I mean, he was. It was overall the same tune. And I am guessing that it was 100% him, because he's the one who, like, this is his livelihood. This is his profession. He is a traditional Gaelic singer, right? And that's his native language. I'm going to have to show you what I mean. So I'm not going to sing. I don't know the Gaelic, so you're welcome. I'm not going to sing it. I'll hum it or I'll la-la it, whatever. So in the normal, whether it was English or Gaelic, the tune is da 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 da, right? He added some flourishes. And I think I noticed that at the point of the flourishes, which normally I am like a purist when it comes to traditional things, like, I mean, I guess you can't say jazz, because jazz is not traditional. And the whole point of jazz is to make it your own. So that's not a good example. However, musical theater is probably a good example. Opera less so. But at musical theater, there are standards or just well-known songs, right, that people sing. And it's not that you can't put your own. You're going to sound your own. You're going to sound unique because of your voice, period. You can have maybe some. You can change phrasing. You can take breaths in different places. You can press, you know, without hurting yourself, press a little harder, maybe take a longer pause than is written in the music. But pretty much you got to give us the music. It has to be recognizable, right? And so when I hear, I can't speak for anyone else, when I hear like some traditional, not even, I don't even mean like has to be Rodgers and Hammerstein traditional, but traditional quote unquote Broadway music or songs, ballads especially, being sung with all these riffs and all this stylization, it is makes my stomach turn. That's not saying they're not talented, but it is not what I grew up with. It is not what I like. And that's totally fine. I'm not really a rap fan unless it's French, which I know is weird. I do like French rap because it's a whole other world. But my point is we all have our own taste in things, and that's totally fine. So I realized that I was like kind of inhaling and holding my breath like when he at the points where he did the flourishes. So as I said, the tune is da 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 with a little flatness there. And what he did was along the lines of da 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 da. I mean, and that's very simplistic. I can't do what he did. I don't have his voice. I don't have, forget the language, I don't have that either. But I can't even, like, I'm speechless. Obviously, I'm talking. But in trying to get a better description of what it was, it's all the things. It's the dude. It's the language. It's the music. But I think what really did it was predominantly the combination of that language or the way it sounded. At least I don't understand a darn thing. That the sound of the language and the flourishes he did. Oh, my heck. I was like, and that's what shocked me, because normally I don't want to hear your flourishes. I want to hear the song.
No, but here's the thing. Here's the thing I'm going to say. Were they flourishes? Sure. But were they traditional?
That's what I'm saying.
Accurate
maybe so.
Style?
Absolutely.
That,
possibly.
To me, that sounded, it didn't sound like endless runs with no connection to the music.
Not at all.
Music.
But going back to what I said, compared with the quote unquote straight melody, it was a flourish. Now, if that is something, or if what he did was more in the style of traditional Gaelic song, which would not surprise me at all. Again, that's his meat and potatoes, right? That's his, or bread and butter, whatever the idiom is. That's his profession. So he totally is the expert here, not me. So I don't know, but I'm glad you said that, because it would not surprise me at all if he literally just did to the melody, either did it on purpose, you know, to make it sound more traditional, or just did something that was not an act. What do you say, like an effect or a flourish, whatever you want to call it, something that is already common in traditional Gaelic song. That's what I don't know. I mean, we'll hopefully find out after this. I'm sure everyone will tell us if we're right or wrong. But
they will.
Summer, it was so gorgeous.
I just had a thought.
Uh-oh, don't hurt yourself.
I know, it was almost painful. But
we haven't even gotten into the first scene, but go ahead. It's not you, that's both of us.
It just hit me when I was thinking back to hearing the theme running through my head again, remembering how it sounded. His voice, to me, sounds like a bagpipe.
Ah, that's interesting.
Like, and not like in a, it's loud and obnoxious and it's long-winded. It's like, it just, the tones that he hits in his voice remind me of the bagpipe.
I could see that, because it was like, and like I said, even though I called it a flourish, it's almost like the end of a bagpipe line.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. I mean, that's what a bagpipe does. Da da, at the end of so many things, right? When they're just either on purpose because they're making it do that, or because they are slightly letting go of the air pressure and it kind of goes off, you know, not off key, but has, you know, it just falls a little bit. The tone falls a little bit. Yes, that's very interesting. I love that.
Yeah.
It was a weird thought. I've done my work for the episode. I can't help you anymore.
It was a weird connection my head made.
No, it's a very good observation.
Anyway.
So after the song, we open with, it's kind of funny. So there's a letter and we get Jamie beginning to narrate it. And then it's finished and most of it's read by Governor Josiah Martin. And he's reading it at his desk, sitting across from Lord John. The letter is about Jamie resigning his position as Indian agent. Before we go on, my first reaction was, wait, what? He just became Indian agent.
No,
that's so fast.
I know, but what was funny is that I know people said Lord John was going to be in this episode, but I didn't expect him to be in the first scene proper. So yeah. When he's reading out loud, I was like, I wonder who he's reading it to. And then it flips around. I was like, Lord John, what are you doing there?
Right? I thought you were in London town.
Right? I'm so confused.
So he's reading it to Lord John, and Governor the Gov has his knickers in a twist over our James. Lord John's all, nah, he's cool. You gotta trust him. He's okay. He's okay. And I speak English, I promise.
I mean, I just say everyone should have a friend like Lord John Grey who will lie his ass off to protect you. No matter the threat.
At this point, it's not lying. He has full belief in Jaime and doesn't have any proof from Jaime personally or firsthand.
But he also knows
that he's changed.
And he knows the rebel he was. And he knows that if something's going on, he's not going to not join it. Everyone knows that. Is it safe for him to do it? No. But there's no way he's ever going to like solidly ally with the British after everything.
You and I know that of Jaime. I disagree that Lord John knows that of Jaime, because later on in the episode, he says, this has been tried before. People who fought at Culloden, they already fought for a dream and they got nowhere. He didn't say killed, but that was like the worst. Like they got killed or they got branded or they got imprisoned or they got, or maybe not branded. I just made that up, I think. Or they got sent off to the colonies. Like there was so much punishment for that if indeed they weren't killed. So they're not going to do it again. Like they're not stupid. So they still may not. Their tendencies, their thoughts about the government may not have changed, but they know enough now. This is what he's saying. They know enough now to know what can be lost and they don't want to go through that again. Because in their eyes and up until this point, the British had never lost. So of course they're going to win. Okay, we find out that Jaime and Claire are in Wilmington, North Carolina, and they are there to attend Flora McDonald's appearance.
And it was, in fact, a blue house, like we talked about, like we were told in our live that we had last week. And because we don't get to see the previews for the week going forward because of the screeners. So I was like, well, if it was a blue house, they were like, they painted River Run. And I was like, I don't think they did that. I was like, I don't think they did that. Because I can't imagine, first of all, if you have a big white plantation house, you did it that way for a reason. So I don't see you randomly going, maybe I'll do blue this year. So whoever built that house wanted a blue house. And it was totally different than River Run.
So Jaime has been invited to the Sons of Liberty event, another event on the down low that evening. I love the inclusion when Jaime and Claire are chatting, the inclusion of the little crush, in quotes, between Jaime and Flora when they were quite young. It was more of like a tussle, I guess. It was not a crush, but it was two little kids, you know, teasing each other, basically having fun at each other's expense. We don't in the book, there is some allusion to them being like between 5 and 8, something like that, 6 and 8. But we don't get any ages here. Even later on when Jaime brings it up again, we don't get any ages. All he says is we were. So we know they're small.
And,
but
and didn't she say something about how they were just children? And children weren't children for long. So because, you know, but 13 or 14, they're off being adults. So, I mean, they had to be someplace in the range of like a toddler. So what, like 3 and 4 to probably 10 and 11. So they're still babies.
So they chat about how ironic it is that former Jacobites are, as we were kind of dancing around a few minutes ago, how former Jacobites are so eager to join the cause of the crown. But as I said, as they have said, and do say in the episode several times, it makes sense. They fought for a dream before. It didn't work. And not just like, oops, too bad, so sad. No, like decimation, too bad. And I just really random comment. I love the makeup on Claire. I do, because out of the two of them, and I know and Jaime does not look bad. Don't get me wrong. He does not look awful. Sam's attractive and his makeup is fine. It does not look bad. But the difference is very stark, meaning hers looks realistic and she looks like she's aged. His looks realistic, but he doesn't look like he's aged much.
But doesn't it look like her hair is becoming less gray?
I don't know. Maybe because of, especially like when in this episode when it's, you know, up in the fancy wig. Yeah, it looked very dark.
Yeah.
But when you look at her on the season 6 key art, number one, it looks like it's shoulder length. I know it's not, but she has her hair's down, but it's like a lot of wispies up front. And I know the environment they're in, the snow or the ash or who knows. It's very not foggy, but it you know, looks has a gray cast on everything. But she definitely has more gray hair in the key art. But yeah, I just thought that was just it just struck me. It was interesting. So when Jamie goes to have that little chat, at least the first chat with the Sons of Liberty, he calls them out. He's like, got to be careful because we're in public. Got to find your people without being too loud. So Jamie calls them out for not being very believable when they said, long live King George.
No, but then he also said, you were too believable. And that's how I knew you couldn't have been real.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But see, that's the thing. Being too believable is the same thing as not being believable. It's you being like, if you're too crass, like if it looks like you can't stand the dude, obviously no one will believe you. But if you take it over the top, it can also be a little sus. So Jamie's already making contacts, yo. He's got Sons of Liberty on his side, in his sphere. Now, Jamie, and they have a little chat. Jamie, as we knew, I think, from last season, Jamie has been part of the Committee of Correspondence for a bit. And the dude brings up the Sons of Liberty dude, the Son of Liberty, brings up the regulators at Alamance, the Battle of Alamance. And he's like, you're well known. And he's like, and the reason he's well known is not just because of the Battle of Alamance, right? But he's known because he fought on the side of the crown. Against the rebels, I should say, against the regulators. And so he's kind of pulling his own card here and saying, look, it's not so safe for me or us, the sons, to be associated with you because of your perceived loyalist tendencies.
Well, yeah, but then he also threw a big hissy fit that has been carried around from mouth to mouth. Talking about how he threw his coat down in disgust and did a big stomp off and retired his commission. He was, in doing that, that had been made so comical that it was unbelievable.
Ha! That's funny. So, Jamie offers him the secret milkshake.
Milkshake? I don't remember a circle jerk.
It was more of a square jerk. Or a rectangle jerk. Or a mirror jerk. The secret, without doing the question and answer, they did the secret thing that Masons do.
I mean, I figured, but there was no milk involved.
Okay, whatever you want to say. That's fine. Back on the ridge, Roger's about to make... I mean, technically,
I guess I'm very literal right now. So every time you say stuff, I'm reliving the... Because I've only watched it the one time. So I'm reliving it. I'm like, he didn't have a milkshake.
No. I see what you're saying. So back to the ridge, back on the ridge, back at the ridge. Roger's about to make mistake number three with single mothers. Now, the first two were the same person. The first one was on the boat when he helped Morag a little bit too much, although understandably he was trying to help the kid. Number two was when he kissed Morag before being hanged. And now Mrs. McCallum. Now, no, he's not about to kiss her. My point is, he's about to make mistake number three. So... He's singing a song, and oopsie. Now, someone needs to get a clip of this, and I'm sure they will because I've only seen it twice, but I had to, like, I rewound it. I'm so old. That's 80s speak there. Reversed it? I went back.
No, it's still rewind.
No, but it's not literal, though. It used to be literal.
Went back.
I went back.
And watched
I went
the
back
scene.
About 10 or 20 seconds. Just to make sure, I know I heard the words correctly, but I wanted to make sure I had their connection to what I knew she meant. So he sings a song. She hears it and she goes, oh, it's so pretty. Can you like teach? I want to hear it. Blah, 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 blah. It's so pretty. And he's like, oh, it's kind of a new song. I don't think you'd know it. And she's like, I don't know. It sounds kind of, I don't know. And then this is what they need. Someone needs to get a clip out of this, a clip of this, of just her saying this. Once he says it's a song from far away, and he gives her the title, she says, quote, I often find myself aching for it. And I'm like, you know there was laughter at that table read. Come on. With that cast, there has to be. So, and with this although she doesn't get a scene, but yeah. So then she wants him to teach the song to Aiden. I was like, sure.
But see, okay. This whole sequence is before he even realizes it's problematic.
Maybe him, but it's not before the audience realizes it's problematic. This is like the third or fourth episode he's been there.
But he's not treating it like it's problematic. We just see, we can see that it is. It gets really problematic later.
Well, it does, but here it's okay. Okay. I think I'd agree with you. I think he doesn't realize it's problematic with regard to the Ridge and others and Bree until, I mean, Bree mentions it to him and that, and he's like, what? No. And from then on, he looks at it with new eyes. But what he does have a little like a about here is not the whole what it is perceived as. He's like, oh, shoot. Anachronism. Can't do this. Can't sing these things at a time, right?
You know what would have been the best response for Rich, for Roger, if he was well, he's not current enough, but if he was from our time period and she said, sometimes I'm what, aching for it? The correct response would have been, that's what she said. Yeah, that's what she said. That is the only acceptable current day answer to that question.
That's what I'm saying. So someone has to get that clip. I mean, yeah, I can't do it because we have screeners, but someone has to do that and like make it into some kind of fun. I don't know. It was brilliant. Anyway, and so she goes, please teach Aiden the song. He's like, oh, okay. So at Bree's house, no, not at Bree's house, on a walkabout, Bree and all. Like
they're near a river.
All the ladies. Yeah. All the single ladies. No, they're all some of the single ladies, two single ladies and some married ladies. Bree and others are looking for a place. It's basically a pity walk. Bree's doing the looking and they're like, yeah, sure. We'll go with you, Bree.
I mean, what else is there to do?
That's true. Well, I mean, you got babies up the boom boom, like Marshley there.
Yeah, I would always choose to go on a walk to get away from my kids.
That's fair. So they're looking for a place to put a water wheel. And she tells them that they're like, oh, well, wouldn't this be better or something like, you know, couldn't Roger help you with this? And she's like, okay. Roger's helping with a smile on her face. Roger is helping Mrs. McCallum. The camera goes to Malva right quick. I don't say that. I wrote evil stare. I don't think it's that evil, but it was like a ha ha ha. So you know what's come. If you've read the books, you know, whether this episode or later, you know what's coming just from that look after what she said about Roger. And they come up on an old fire with some flat stones, some human finger bones, and some seaweed. And Marshley's like, yep, it's a charm. It's a love charm. Matter of fact, it's called Venom of the North Wind. Lizzie is suddenly, okay, hold on now. Lizzie is suddenly, after three seasons, again having an attack of malaria.
She does.
And I'm keeping my voice on purpose, somewhat calm and news anchory. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's in that vein-ish because it's full of bollocks. So geez Louise, they pull it out of their ass when it's convenient. Am I wrong? Am I wrong? I just want to know, am I totally wrong? I could be wrong. I'm happy, but I'm okay to be wrong. But am I wrong?
They're only doing it when it propels the story. They're not showing the numerous attacks that are happening because
you don't have to show it. Like I said, you don't have to show it and show her falling and show her getting treatment. You have to at least mention it in passing. Like, oh, where's Lizzie? Oh, she's not feeling well. She's upstairs laying out. She's having another bout of malaria. Like that again. I said this so many times about different things. Takes no time and no budget to have someone say half a sentence about Lizzie and malaria.
You don't know that. Some people get paid by the word.
I mean, in the writing of it, in the performing of it, or in the choosing what to cut, there may be choices made. Anyhoozle, I give up. I don't know what to say. I'm sure I'll have passionate responses to other things too. But rather than blow up, I'm just like, I'll talk. This is my I give up voice.
this episode was full of callbacks to things that were mentioned once and then brought back to the forefront. First, and then they revealed, there were so many revelations in it that I was like, is there gonna, what are you
leaving for the next episode?
Right. And I'm like, if all of these problems happen concurrently in the series, as opposed to how they were in the book, which they all kind of scattered, they weren't all together. But they have taken three major arcs and squish them together to basically reintroduce them to us so that they are allowed to be there.
Now, not all arcs have to be wrapped up in these eight episodes because
no, but they have to be started again if they're going to ever get them.
Oh, heck, I know. And I think I know one. Okay, so back to pick up where we were.
You better know three.
Three?
We've already talked about one.
Roger?
Malaria.
Oh, Lord.
That's the first one that they brought back up out of seemingly nowhere to make sure that everyone remembers.
Okay, I'll say it in German and I'll delete it. Malaria, das mit dem Gold, yes. Und das mit dem Juwelen. No?
No.
Oh, okay.
The baby. Well,
that's number four. Four.
That's what then it's four.
Ah! That's okay. Hold
I'm
on.
Just saying, it was a lot in one episode. Like this is, if this were a less long book, I feel
do
like
you
they could
know
have
why?
Made
I'm not
a more
complaining.
Evenly paced.
I just spit on my mic. Do you want to know why they did this? Besides giving, not giving us, besides getting in what they needed to get in. Do you know why it felt like a...
Because they want to move on to the next book and they can't until they finish the things that happen here.
But do you know why it felt like they were just bringing up stuff that they had dropped two seasons ago? Not the baby so much, but...
Because they haven't been mentioned since?
I mean, no, I'm saying... No, that is the truth. They haven't been mentioned forever or maybe once, if ever. My point is, do you want to know why? Besides, yes, they're trying to bring
them
in.
Here's the other thing I'm going to say. They took
Ian
such
got a whole... episode last week. That's why
I was just gonna say that. I was
Stop
like they
it.
Spent so much time on Ian that they're like, okay, now we got to catch up and throw
oh
all of
God.
The other things okay. that need to be discussed in this season.
Hold on. So what you're saying is, and I think you're agreeing with me because we both said the same, at least we didn't have a reasoning about the same thing. So what you're saying is they pulled a Murtaugh by giving Ian so much time that they had to like rush up. Now, what they did with Ian was actually in the book. So it's not bad at all.
But it's not even in this book.
Oh, Lord.
Not all of it. You know what I mean? It's
yes,
like,
I know.
And that's the same thing with this stuff. It's like they're pulling stuff from a bunch of other books. To make it make sense that they're reintroducing it and they're squishing it all now because they spent so much time.
They're squishing
and,
it all.
And deservedly. Deservedly.
So this episode is called Squished.
Squat.
I mean, I don't name our episode discussions for the show because I want to keep the title in there so
easy
to find.
How about the episode title is It's Toit.
Summer. No, that's Claire. Claire keeps it toit. Okay. Back to the show. Maybe, hopefully. In Wilmington. Back in Wilmington, they're at the soiree, afternoon ray, whatever. People are mingling at this little Flora-do.
And everyone's meeting and greeting Flora McDonald.
Jamie and Claire run into Lord John. He asks about William. John praises Flora. And then Flora comes up and they chat. John praises Flora. And then they F off to go find Jocasta.
I s*** you not. If they bring William into this season too, I'm going to like lose my f***ing mind.
To leave that curse in because
like it's just so much like there are so many threads being woven together right now that I'm
it's like a tease but don't I don't even know girlfriend I don't even know so I'm like what does that mean they're gonna go find Jocasta what her up quote okay sorry what does this mean hold on Summer well this okay this is along with one of the things that okay let's just say it let's include it now we won't elaborate. But the Summer said three things and Summer said that there was so much and she's right. Like this being either teased or dropped into this episode that will not ever be wrapped up in this episode, let alone not everything wrapped up in this season. But they have to drop it in somehow if they're going to include it. Right. So you heard me go off about malaria earlier. Like that's legit. Right. That's my I've given up voices, Lizzie and malaria, because if I don't have control over it, I'll just sound like a mad. Whatever. So after the malaria comment, what Summer mentioned was that there's like three things that they just drop in here like a bomb, right? Like crop dusting. No, not like crop dusting because they don't linger. They just come in and then it's like a what do you call those things when you get like a when Diana came on screen for like a little bit? A cameo. It's like a cameo that you're not supposed to know about. I mean, it's there if you see it or an Easter egg, whatever, but it's not an Easter egg. You see it. You're like, oh, my gosh, they did it. But then they never say anything about it again. No one ever talks about it. No one ever acknowledges it. And you're like, wait, what? Did they just bring up the who's he wants it? So the three things that I thought Summer meant were the malaria, that has never been, except for one time, two seasons ago. The Emerald, the person who stole the jewel. And we're not going to say anything more than that because we can't. And then the Frenchman's gold, right? I said, is that what you mean? Hold on. I said, are those the three? And Summer goes, well, no, you left out
a fourth one.
I know, but Summer, say it.
Oh, the baby. Baby reveal.
Summer's all baby. And I was like, the F? So there's four things in here that will not be resolved. Well, not most of, well, probably the malaria is the one that's closest to being not resolved, but we actually will get somewhere.
I feel like this episode was sponsored by Loki because...
Oh, Summer. Oh, to come in and just drop a bomb and leave.
It's just everywhere.
Chaos monster.
Good Lord.
Claire's and it's the not chaos even monster.
Claire this time.
I know, right? That's hysterical. Okay, so all this to say, that's why... So we mentioned the three, actually four things that come up. So we already discussed the malaria part, and it will come back in this episode one more time to kind of slightly get us further along. But now they have off to go find Jocasta. And when they get there, Jocasta's like, oh, ha, hoo, la, la. And she says, quote, Mr. Bug's been delivering all my sweetmeats, so you've no need to come yourselves. Is that it? Unquote. Because it was like, she was saying, like, why don't you ever come visit me? And she goes, I see how it is. Mr. Bug brings all these things to me, so you never have to come yourself. And I wrote, hold up. Are you telling me River Run can't source sweetmeats from anywhere closer than the ridge? Okay, that idiocy aside, her line is opening perhaps something that makes it seem like Mr. Bug goes there semi-regularly. Maybe. I don't know. What do you think, Sam?
I will not be pulled along on this journey with you.
No, what are you talking about? I'm not asking you to spoil.
No, but you're trying to get responses out of me instead of just letting me respond. It's like you're trying to lead me to what you want me to say. And I'm like,
no, it's not what I want you to say. I want to know, are you thinking on the same lines I am? Do you think that line was intentionally put there like that?
Ginger, that line, the line later in the
she's
episode.
She's all F yes, these 23 times.
I was like, they had to do a lot of work to make that all make sense.
Girl, and it still didn't make sense.
No.
So. I keep losing my place. Okay. So basically what we're to take from that, again, without spoiling, is because we can't connect it to one of the four. But again, unless this is completely out of left field and not related, which would be really weird, we believe it's related to one of the four things that they just kind of, we'll just use Loki as a verb. One of the four things that they Loki'd on us this episode. We cannot connect it, but if you read the books, you'll know. But dear, especially if you are you listen to us, we thank you so much.
And honestly, the only reason they didn't show us a mausoleum is because we weren't at River Run.
That's another good point. But it was just so funny that out of everybody, she mentions Mr. Bug. Not only that, but that he seems to go there semi-regularly to deliver sweetmeats. How redonk is that? I mean, that's so random. I know that they packed the carriage, whatever, cart when he left. I'm sure they included sweetmeats. They could even had a line about it. Who cares? I'm not going to go back and listen.
Maybe there's somebody on the ridge that makes the best sweetmeat that she's ever had, that has the most traditional Scottish sweetmeats. And that's why she wants it from the ridge. We don't have to talk about why the bug goes. We don't have to talk about
the bug.
I mean, that's all fine. It's just an establishing moment to say, oh, don't forget, book readers who thought we let this go. Mr. Bug still delivers stuff to the River Run.
We're
going to
diddle. Just because we left you like lacking, not lacking, because we had a great
just
show.
Just because we introduced them in face only last season.
We're going to diddle you again. Ago. We're going to diddle you a little bit now and just hopefully that it's enough to, you know, maybe diddle you and never like we may not bring you.
So you forget that we didn't diddle you for the last couple
two
years.
2 years. Correct. Or two seasons, or season and a half, whatever. Okay, so then we find out, and I think this is a change from, I'm not complaining about change, I'm just observing that it's a change, at least not the end effect, but maybe the manner in which it happens. Then we find out that Jocasta, true to her ways, as remember when Jamie and Claire first arrived, right? They, in the new world, she was trying everything she could to get him to be her heir, and then she tried to get Bree, and then she settled, I think we find out she settled everything onto Jem, right? And yes. Now she's married, so at least she has a you know, a husband.
But she picked a really old one, which means he could go at any time.
Frasers are stubborn, but Mackenzies are sly as foxes. So that's the one I wouldn't trust, not the Fraser. So anyway, she apparently, and I don't think this is in the book, or the manner, the way it happened isn't in the book. So she, when Fraser, good grief, when, remember last episode, Jamie had sent Fergus to New Bern or somewhere thereabouts to, he was doing an errand for Jamie. It was not to find a printing press. It was an errand. And while he was there, I'm sure he either, you know, caught up with her, stayed with her, did something with her, you know, their family connection, right? So we learn now that Jocasta, if I'm reading the lines, between the lines correctly, like she bought the press for him. She bought the joint for him. She enabled him to become a printer once again. Now that feeds right perfectly into the story. That's like no change. That's what I'm saying. The end effect is the same, but that is not the manner with which it happened in the books. There's mention of Marsley and the fam joining him in New Bern. Then at this point, I think it's when we get introduced to Mary, an enslaved woman, Mary. And again, not that we need to see on camera, obviously, every single time that the Frasers visit River Run. We're not going to. I know that. But the way, there must have been a time where they were there and they met Mary, because I don't think we ever met Mary. We met Phaedra, but Phaedra's gone.
We did not, but they cut her out after one season.
Well, apparently the second season, which would have been last season. Season 5, apparently scheduling didn't work out. But then I guess after that, they just didn't want to have her back. I don't know. Doesn't matter, but everyone seemed to know Mary except us. No one knows Mary. I guess they just totally give up on Phaedra. Fine, whatever. And to be honest, not having Phaedra there, at least if it's a different character, you don't have to wonder like, oh, I wonder if Phaedra's there, I wonder why they don't keep the storyline. We can say it now that there's like, they're not going to do it. In the books, there's a storyline between Phaedra and Duncan Innes. She helps him get it up for the first time. I don't know, first time. I don't know if he was never had it, maybe never, but if not never, then it's been decades. She helps him reintroduce him to his manhood. And
didn't he have kids at one point?
That I do not know. And something I think it's pretty safe to say they are not going to be doing, even if they have the character back, which we don't know. I guess we do know. I guess they got rid of him.
But Ulysses is already gone.
Yeah, exactly. So Ulysses in the books had a hot tort affair for many years with Jocasta. So they got rid of that too. And I think, you know, that those are the types of things, like not eating her after one season, but not including the Phaedra Duncan storyline and not including Jocasta Ulysses storyline. Those are things that really don't, they don't take away from
the main story arcs,
the 37,000 other story arcs in this book.
Also, they made too many reveals in this episode. There wasn't time for that one.
So, back on the ridge, the boys, the twins, come to help with Lizzie. Bree sends them off with her gallberry ointment and also asks them to keep an eye out for some more of the gallberries that are needed to make this ointment. So, I don't think you could necessarily say, because I don't think this is a ball dropping or a Loki bomb, because this has been teased. Maybe not. Yeah, this has been continuously teased in small ways and in somewhat larger ways. But I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, so I'm not going to say anything more. But I just don't think this scene with the twins is a Loki bomb. This is something they've been good about.
No, they've been building this. This was not dropped.
This is legitimate building. Correct. Back in Wilmington, McDonald is peeved with not having had a warning. Meaning Major McDonald. We have too many McDonald's here. Major McDonald. Then comes Flora and her husband, the McDonald's and the McDonald's. And then Flora confirms their little meetup as kids. And this is when Jamie says, yes, we were we. And when Flora went to get dressed, they're like, how are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And she says, so this is one of the Loki bombs. Flora went to get dressed. She says she saw a thief going through her things, and he had stolen her necklace. He took off. Some men captured him. They went after him and captured him. They wait for the police, and they were able to return the necklace to her, but it was missing one stone. If I'm not mistaken, it was an emerald, or at least a green stone. And just in time, Jocasta has a headache, and the three women, Jocasta, Claire, and Flora, get out. And she's like, how do you know what's wrong with her? Tell me what's wrong with me. And Claire basically diagnoses her with nerves. Like, that's not hard.
She's like, you just need an Ativan.
By the way, I have something that have a little something something that can help with nerves too. Wink, wink.
Good Lord. I was like, we're really doing this? Okay.
Back at the Ridge, Roger comes home a-singing, telling Bree that he introduced this new song, to Amy McCallum and co. It was composed in the 1950s, he said, and Bree mentions their river walk, the love charm, and they have it out a little bit. They're not pissy. She's just like, look, do you understand what other people are saying? Or, what, you know, pretty soon they're going to be thinking, if not already. She's like, we need you. And he's like, oh, no, he says she needs me. And she's like, we need you, bish. And yeah. he points out that she's amazing and can do all these things. And like, OK, that's great. But that's not a response to her saying that they need you. That's a little bit, that's almost like gaslighting, Roger.
Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't see it yet. So he thinks she's being ridiculous. And the first thing you do is be like, you're crazy. I haven't seen any of that. And I've been there. So I think that people are just gossiping for no reason to gossip.
Now, having said that, once they kind of snuggle muggle, their theme comes up and it is still the most beautiful one in my very strong, not humble opinion. And she goes, Amy needs to find her own husband. And I was like, oh, I'm like, that's obviously she needed to say that. And no one disagrees with that. The whole Ridge agrees with that. But I'm like, oh, I wonder, obviously not tonight and maybe not this season, but I wonder if we're going to get a Bobby. We almost have to get a Bobby, right? Even if it's not the same
background. I thought we were going to have one dropped at us when there was the big melee in town. I was like, ugh, is this how we're getting Bobby? And they're going to give it to us in this fucking episode?
Summer thought, why not? Just bring in.
I mean, we've already overloaded my brain with storylines to try to finish by the end of at least this next season so we can move on to the new book. But God,
because bless Ian it. Had needed his own episode.
He actually did.
I agree. He's been, I don't say effed off because that's not true. He's been very lightly or not included for so long.
He was with the Mohawk for at least half of last season.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about half, but a good chunk. Back in Wilmington, the three women are enjoying some hemp flower. Go on, girls. Claire's all, no F's will I drink to the Bonnie Prince. Because Flora's all, we should drink to the Bonnie Prince. And Claire's like, I think we should drink to this. And so she's basically saying F that. She thinks she's dropping some tea when she says, quote, he wasn't a leader of men. Why do I say she thinks she's dropping some tea?
Anyone who's met him knows this. And she spent a lot of time with him on a very small rowboat in the sea.
Well,
The sea to sky.
Yes. Jocasta says she always wanted to meet a member of the royal family. Any royal family, apparently. And Claire flashes back to Culloden, not visually, but in speech. And, of course, Versailles. Fun times. And we go straight into uh-oh music. And the urge... We can tell that she's having an urge to escape, right? She wants to escape into ether play. And when the two ladies leave, Jocasta and Flora go off together. Claire's like, I just need some time.
Mm-mm. This was the most unwise place to do ether. And I'll explain when you finish your statements.
Okay. So anyway, she says, oh, ladies, go off. I need to collect myself or whatever. And she's like, I know full well I'm going to do, or at least probably going to do some ether play. And as they're leaving, Jocasta says... She basically declares her love only for Murtaugh.
Unnecessary. I know, to remind us of a storyline they created.
That pooped on them. Yep.
Yeah. So.
Say it, girl.
That's all fine and dandy. And then they leave, right? And she's, I'm going to pack up my medicine bag. And then she looks in her medicine bag because she's out on a gazebo. But she's not really alone. You're never alone at places like that when there's a big frickin' party going on. She's lucky she didn't wake up with loser sharpied on her forehead or a d*** on her face. Because you are completely incapacitated for a period of time when you have ether. Like, it's a coma. It's a tiny coma. You don't do that outside of the comfort of a place where you feel safe and secure. She's just doing this out in the open at a party. I don't buy it.
That's hard to believe, too. Yeah, I agree with you. Flora... It's time to give her speech. Flora gives her speech while Lord John and Jamie give each other googly eyes. Non-romantical. Get your head out of the gutter. Flora makes the case for remaining loyal. In come the bagpipes. Jaime and Lord John go off together. Lord John tells him that Governor Martin has concerns. What's up? Jaime's about to let out a secret. Then Mary shows up. She's like, oh, sir, there's trouble in town. So, of course, Jaime goes with. The dudes whose panties are in a twist are upset with a printer who printed a sheet that honored Flora. And thus, you know, trying to further the cause of loyalty to the crown. Jaime is just trying to save the dude's life. He's not committed to a side here trying to save a life. He's just trying to be a good human. The crowd is all rabble-rousing. So they save the dude from being, killed. Yeah, they tried to tar and feather Jaime, they tried to tar Jaime. They get him a little bit, but not much. They do shoot him, the guy, but only in his arm. But Claire, but he ends up living, and Claire, back at Chez Claire, she doctors him up just fine. They chat about their journey, the future, the war, the people on the ridge, and everything that might happen. Back on the ridge, let's put up the church bell. The Christie men and Roger head up. Roger's asked to go inside and check. I think get some rope or
get
something.
Get the pulleys. Get the rope and pulleys from the inside.
And he's like, now to be fair. Both times. I saw it the first time without even looking for it. And I was like, oh, that's funny. And I confirmed it on time number two. Roger didn't look too happy to have to go run up into the church.
Yeah, no, he didn't want to do it.
He didn't want to go grab his thingies. He really didn't want to be there with them at all, I don't think. Anyway, he's like, fine, I'll go in there and look.
They have completely abandoned Roger's voice problems.
Oh, girlfriend, yeah, that's redonk. They're barely, by a thread are they hanging on to his wanting to be a minister. Like, by a thread. So, it still can come out, but, like, tonight. In this episode, when he's talking about, well, later on, we're not there yet, when he is invited to dinner to, by Amy, when he's over there to finish up finally, and she's like, well, I have to say thank you. We have to do this, and I have to show you my thanks, and da da da. And he goes in.
Because he sees it now.
He does see it, but later on when he tells Bree, well, I had to do this, and she's like, he goes, I'm like a minister to her. And she's like, but you're not a minister.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, they've used that word. They've included that very purposefully. Although, yes, it totally fits the conversation and what he's trying to couch it as, and what she's trying to show him it's absolutely not. The fact that they use that very specific noun means that, like, we know they know the story, right? I don't think it's a Loki bomb. I don't think it was Loki bomb. I think they're tittering with it or messing with it. And I think
this is an established storyline that's been established over years with his being getting more religious, and then also her being jealous and being mad at him for messing around with married ladies. All of these are all established.
Yeah, but I don't know that it's established that he wants to actually become a minister. He has made no movement to want to go be ordained. That's what I'm trying to say. So it's not new that he's suddenly religious, or that he was brought up by a pastor, right? That's not new. And yes, it's been included. It's part of his lore. It's part of, not his lore, part of his backstory.
Canon,
thank you. So, Christy, Men, and Roger head up. Roger goes in to check out to get whatever, rope, whatever. And when he goes in there, he sees Malvin necking with Obadiah Henderson.
That tramp. I mean, it's just, they're not pretending anymore. They're not going to give us any indication.
Well, they're on 6:05. They don't have time to pretend.
I know, but that's my whole point, is that she did not become a raging lunatic bitch this fast in the book.
Or, yeah, I'm not going to say the naughty
word.
In
the storyline, in the plot, like, it builds to it. You see her doing a lot more stuff with Claire. You see them building that relationship. And then, you know, once the sickness comes to the ridge, which I believe is going to be happening very soon, probably next week, you know, then she kind of starts creating machinations in that moment that start Claire wondering. So, I mean, but it's like they're laying it out for everyone else how unstable and dangerous this person is.
And so she confronts, or he doesn't really confront them. He goes in to get rope or something, right? And they're like, oh, you found us. And he stands up and, we're not doing anything. And Roger's like, the F you aren't. It looks like it to me. And she just straight up walks very slowly and confidently up to him and says, "You tell on me, I'll tell on you. And who will they believe?" And we get more uh-oh music here. And this is totally the wrong word, but I was not happy with her. So I wrote, "What eschatologist?" And it just, like, someone who studies poo. It's not the right word, but nicer than something I could have said. Obadiah Henderson comes out and helps with the bell. Roger again goes to McCallum's place later on to finish the hearth. He's like, "This is my last time." And she invites him into dinner. And he's like, of course he stays.
"Oh, but let me repay your kindness, sir."
Yes. By this time, not only does he realize it, but he's also like, she's hella flirting too. I mean, she's not like showing her boobs and like winking at him, but because her kids are there. But out short of that,
she sat him at the head of the table and then she served him first. And then she was wanting him to regale her son with tales, as you would probably do to the father of your children.
Back in Wilmington, Jocasta has, we find out, she is paid. She's the one who paid for Flora's gathering. And she says it was to further the cause of peace. And she goes, quote, "These rebellions lead nowhere," unquote. Ha ha. Jamie tells her, "Auntie, I know exactly what you're doing. You're using your money to buy people, including Fergus. How would it be if he ends up getting twisted in all this stuff and, you know, gets hurt or blah, blah, blah?" And she's like, "I'm uncomfortable with this kind of talk." She claims fatigue and skedaddles. Mary says, okay, this is another one of the like sideways mentions of things. Mary says to Jamie that Jocasta hasn't been herself since Myrta died. Okay, too bad, so sad, because Myrta died 20 years before that, biosh. Anyway, she hasn't been herself.
Not in this timeline.
He died. Mary says she hasn't been herself since Myrta died. And she talks about bloody. She talks about money stained with blood and her daughter Morna and the French gold.
In this one moment, I was like, mother.
I can't. And I wrote, are they going to? No, they didn't hear. They didn't yet. But the mention, yeah, I see. And we can't even say much about it because I don't want to spoil for people who haven't read. You can see what we mean when you mention the Frenchman's gold. It has now been Loki bombed twice, right? At least twice. We can't say the first one because.
No, the other two are still coming.
No. But I mean, the Frenchman's gold is one of the four bombs. And how was it bombed? By this quote and by something else that happened earlier that we talked about, but we can't connect it to the bomb because that's a spoiler. Anywhoozle, yes. Back at the ridge, Bree with a vroom and a gem. Roger comes
home. Different vroom.
Roger comes home from a meal and he tells her about Obadiah looking in on Amy. He's like, "Yeah, I got him to take over my place." And I was like, so he's not gonna tell her what happened in the church? He's too scared. He admits his weakness for young mothers. And no one mentions a morag or a hanging. Like, seriously? Like, you, it's not enough to say you have a weakness for young mothers. Like, yeah, honey, it almost got you killed. Well, once it almost got you killed. Another time I wasn't with you, but this was another time where here it could have been like really a bad fallout too.
I mean, this was his whole Captain Obvious statement. Everyone knows.
Exactly. And their theme comes up. Still the most beautiful in my eyes, ears. And, okay, this is really interesting. I'm only going to say it. I want you to talk about it. I'm only going to say it because of how the music changed. It was so interesting. So as they're talking, their theme comes up. So the Roger and Bree theme, Bree and Roger theme, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the Loki bombs.
She announces her baby.
And as soon as she announces our baby, her baby, well, come on, it's our baby. It's our baby that we all want. As soon as she announces our baby, it goes straight to the Ridge theme.
It sure did.
Because she got it, because she heard it. And I was like, what an odd turn.
I think the reason for making it a Ridge theme is because the whole Ridge is celebrating. Everyone knows they've been struggling. Great news for the whole family. And it's a wholesome. It's a wholesome revelation. Most of the revelations we get are not wholesome.
Huh. The show is not wholesome.
No, it's not.
We have a even
but
though
the
we...
Ridge theme throws up during throws up. The Ridge theme comes. Damn it!
Oh man!
The Ridge theme comes up every time we have one of those wholesome montages.
That's true. It's definitely Lallybroch-ish-esque, and yes, and I wholesome is a good. Wholesome and homey are good words for it. Then we go to, I don't know if this is a bomb. We didn't mention it with, we did not, I don't think we mentioned it as one of the Loki bombs. But the next scene we have is Malva walking into the shed of a dead man. And I, if you know the books, we can assume who it is. If you don't know the books, it doesn't really matter who it is.
Wasn't it the Sin Eater?
I believe so, yes.
It looked like him.
Yeah, it looked like him. And they show her cutting off.
He was blue.
He was blue and like black. Yeah. They show her cutting off a finger.
She kept looking at his face like he was going to wake up and go, ow.
She's cutting off another finger. So now we know not only did. Yeah. So she's done this before because there was already a finger missing. And it's confirmation that she was the one who did that love spell or charm. But yeah.
Gross.
It's bad enough what she does right there. But I wonder if.
I was like.
It's like she's got her own personal stash right now.
You know. I know. What's funny to me, and it's only funny to me because this is what went on inside of my head, because I was not remembering about what was coming with her. I was just like, what? The only place she can sit down and no one's going to find her or look for her is in this cabin with a dead dude? What is happening right now? Because she like sat down next to him like, there's my little sitting spot. Don't mind the flies. It's fine. Then I figured it out.
And then back in Wilmington, Jamie is going to meet with the people again. The Sons of Liberty. But Lord John clues him in on the fact that the Brits are coming to pounce on the Sons of Liberty later that night. Jamie tells John what he can regarding the new country that's going to be coming, freedom, blah, blah, blah. John does not understand. John takes it personally that Jamie is once again, well, not to him once again, but once again in Jamie's life, that he's not going to be on the side of the crown. He's like, after all you've been through, how could you do this again, right? That's what John does not understand, and that makes perfect sense. Jamie tries to get John, he's like, look, John, just come with me to meet these dudes. Just listen to them. And John's all, that's a no. And he's like, okay, at the very least, can you delay your men? Like, let us meet for a little bit, and I'll try and, like, get us out of there. And he's like, okay, I'll see what I can do. As he leaves, John's face is like, oh, John is a simp for Jamie. He rolls over at the slightest request.
He has to. That's his only purpose in this entire storyline.
That's true.
To further Jamie's plot.
Later, Jamie has joined the meeting, but they want to boot him out. They're like, you were too loyal for us. You defended that printer. And Jamie's like, you mean the fact that I was trying to not get a man killed? The men have no chill. He's like, that dude's pamphlet threatens our cause. Jamie confronts the dudes and calls them out for their own hypocrisy. He lectures them about liberty, and Jamie goes full Merriam-Webster on them. And they're like, look, how do we trust you? And he's like, well, look out that window right there. Soldiers are coming to make an arrest. And they're there. And he's like, get the men to leave. The rest of us stay here and do something. Fake it. Fake them out. And so they do. So they fake them that they're playing billiards and surprise. And they say, oh, soldiers, nice for you to come. Do you want to join us? So here, Jamie, I guess, has proven his loyalty to the Sons. Oh, back on the ridge. What I wrote sounds so wrong, but I'll read it. Brie fiddles with Henri Christian. Lizzie, we don't see her. But we hear about her. Lizzie is apparently feeling better. And the twins are caring for her still. And they're obsessed. And Marsley calls it at 20 feet. You're pregnant!
But then she's just like, bitch, I thought we were sisters.
I know.
How the hell are you not going to be... How are you going to keep that from me? How do you think you're going to keep that from me?
Yeah, exactly.
Me?
I thought at first, oh, it's just something that I thought, how, you know, she knows something in the air. But on the second time, I actually looked up and I looked at what Marsley was looking at. I don't think a woman, children or no, petting, fiddling is wrong. But like admiring a baby, that means diddle poop squat. But if you watch, she's admiring the baby and her other hand is on her stomach.
Yeah, that's like, first of all, that is a huge giveaway. Honestly, until my pregnancy was actively showing, I never touched my belly like that. Ever. And maybe that's just a me thing, but I would never have absentmindedly looked at somebody's baby and caressed myself.
That's like pregnancy porn. I don't even know.
I'm just saying.
It's not. That's wrong. Back in Wilmington, Jamie and Claire get ready to leave for home. Claire hears some kind of whistling. Now, I don't know if we had that exact song whistled in season 5. I'm not going to go back and listen.
It was just a modern song. It was just a song before its time.
Modern for that modern compared to that time, yes. So it is called the Colonel Bogey March. And it was I looked it up. It was composed in 1914. So it's definitely, it's before Claire's time even.
Wasn't that in the Bridge on the River Kwai, the movie?
That I don't know, but maybe. But it was composed in 1914. So probably for or around the time of, you know, World War I, right? And so it's definitely not from the 18th century.
It's also called the River Kwai March.
Oh, okay. I cannot prove anything from the book. I have a good guess. And from the look of the dude, just the, like, we got like the silhouette of him. We have, I think, also some low-key visual proof, confirmation, if-ish. And then the fact that not because of what specific song he sang or was whistling, but the fact that the song was from the 20th century. That's three things, right? Plus, we know what the book story is. We heard a modern song being whistled, and we saw the outline of a dude. And we saw the emerald or the missing gem, jewel, in her in his hand. So, yeah, if you've read the books, you know exactly who we're trying to whom we're trying to telepathically.
Telepathically, there it is.
It'll come out. Zap to you right now. Yeah, I believe it was him. Correct. 100%. You too?
I mean, it would be hard for it to have been
somebody else.
For her to have heard that. But for her to have heard that from where she was, from a dude that was very shortly thereafter in prison.
Yes.
That I found weird.
It wasn't like he was being walked around.
It could have been carried on the wind. You know what I mean? Because he was facing a window wherever he is. And if he is across the river in the town, I guess if the wind is right and over on open water, you can hear it. But that it could have been carried on the wind over the water. So that is possible. But it seems...
I will say this, and it's, I don't think it's a spoiler. It's a hint for people who have not read the books but have watched all the episodes. I will not say anything about the dude. I will, meaning like to identify him as far as what he looks like or anything or his name, except to say you have met him before. You, dear viewer, have met him before.
And that was episode 5 of season 6 of Outlander. Please join us next time when we will be discussing episode 606, entitled The World Turned Upside Down.
Getting us ever closer to the salad bar.
Leafy greens.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Carlene Z.
And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, join our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you're interested in any Outlander Pod branded merchandise, you can visit our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20. Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.